Candace Stanley here. I have the pleasure of getting to interview someone I have long admired. And when I was trying to figure out how to open this interview, it was challenging for me to figure out how to do the introduction, because here's how I would describe you: humorist, author, singer, songwriter. Politician. So I want you to tell me how you would describe yourself.
Probably as a rambling hunchback.
I missed that one.
Travels from town to town, and itinerant economist. No, I don't know how to describe myself. I know this week I'm 71 years old, though I read at the 73-year-old level. And losing my hearing, which I like, but sometimes it's irritating. You can't, but you can imagine more interesting things that people are saying than what they're really saying. For instance, the kid on the plane next to me last month, I told him I was 70 at the time, and I told him I couldn't believe it. And he said, well, his father has just turned 70, and he's wearing a bikini. I thought this sounded interesting, so I talked to the kid. I mean, he might have been a 47-year-old man. I don't know. I talked to him some more. And then I found out what he'd really said, which was, my dad has just turned 70, and he's moving to McKinney, Texas, a little town near Dallas. And then Willie calls about a couple months ago, and we're talking about the... Yes. Yeah, Willie Nelson calls to... talk about what we're going to record on this record, The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. And it's in the middle of the night. He's in Hawaii. And I hear this voice say, it's Willie. And I said, who's calling me? Who is this? And he goes, it's Willie. And I said, who is it? Who's calling? And he says, it's Willie Nelson. You remember me on the road again. So it's not easy losing your hearing, but it's a fun kind of thing. Well, to be on the road at all is a privilege. To be able to play Mondays and Tuesday nights and draw crowds and have a record that's actually being listened to by people is a good thing, because we didn't do Loneliest Man I Ever Met to educate millennials. I mean, I'm not trying to show them Tom Waits and Warren Zevon and others. If they want to, pick it up. It was done without any regard for charts or Nashville or Hollywood or who's going to listen or disc jockeys or anything. It was performed and recorded for a silent witness. And I see dead people mostly, and I'm sure Willie sees a lot more than I do, because most of the people I've loved are gone. But I've loved many people in my life, and I still do, and that's why I'm a lucky guy.
Why the return to recording? It's been more than a decade. It's been more than two decades since you've last released an album.
Well, as Willie says, if you fail at something long enough, you become a legend. And Brian Molnar from New Jersey produced the record, and he did it on our ranch in Texas. And he kind of badgered me into it. The result was very interesting, and he did it. I mean, it sounded really good, and some of the versions are excellent. And so the whole thing then took on an unconscious, accidental, a conceptualization, a concept album that was not ever intended really to be one. Like, people have asked me, is the hooker in Minneapolis the same girl as Bob Dylan's girl from the North Country? Because it seems that she might be. Someone asked me that. Well, and then I told them Bob and I have had a mutual girlfriend, and she is from the North Country. And, of course, she was jumping rope in the schoolyard when Bob wrote the song, so it's really... not specifically about her, but about someone like her. And that's a linkage there where we both let this girl go. And that was how we kept her. I mean, we let her slip through our fingers. And those are the only things and the only people you keep. So Some have said this record's melancholy or tragic. It's not really tragic, except as true love is always tragic. Witnessing, let's say, true love usually results in a hostage situation. And I think that had Romeo and Juliet had a happy Hollywood ending, we would not know who they were today. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't know what they did. And Churchill would have to find another brand of cigars.
So if it's not a melancholy record and it wasn't designed to be, why the title Loneliest Man?
Well, I'm not saying it's not melancholy. I'm saying if you're a young person or an old person that wants to be an artist, if you want to be an artist, you better know that they buried Mozart in a pauper's grave. And you see what happened to Van Gogh, how much support he got. So, and the same is true of most people I love and admire. You got to be miserable. Step one, be miserable if you want to be an artist. I fight happiness at every turn. You look at guys like Willie and Bob and Merle and Chris. If they're not writing to the level that they once did, it's partly because success has distanced them from their art. And it's partly because the whole culture has changed. It's an ADD culture. And it's very politically correct.
Now, politically, you have your opinions and you've let those known right now. I quote you most often with a phrase I have on a T-shirt that I should have brought tonight that says, "May the God of your choice bless you," which goes right back to the political correctness you were just talking about. But where did that stem from?
That's on loan from Billy Joe Shaver, who gave it to me. He said, "Take this and run with it." And I have. May the God of your choice bless you is, well, it's kind of a Zen idea. There's a real truth. See, I had no confidence in recording stuff because we are navigating, living in, and dying in a Miley Cyrus world. And that's really, and if you think about it too much, now Willie again would say, no, it's not true. There's, you know, but I really think there's a handful of geezers left that provide real inspiration. And many of them are dead, have died. Many of the, just a handful left. And you shouldn't have to go see a guy that's older than me to get inspiration. There ought to be some middle-aged guy or some young musicians that can provide that. But I think they're similar to politicians, that there's nobody on the political landscape. Like, you know, I'd vote for Donald Trump, but I don't really like a guy that gives $1 million to a children's hospital and then slams his name all over the wall in big letters. I don't love people who die and leave a great amount of hammered steel. That's not the point of it. The people I love, almost all died broke or died in some, like Hank Williams in a situation like that, that, you know, his life was just unraveling. Martin Luther King, nothing. Gandhi, you know what he had. Zero. Jesus, the same. And Mandela's another one that has spent most of his time, only more than 30 years in prison, all told. Mm-hmm. And Mandela's the one who was listening to Ride 'em Jew Boy in his prison cell on Robben Island from a smuggled tape cassette. And when I found this out, when I went to South Africa in 96, and the guys told me this, you know, that the guy in the next cell, Tokyo Seshwale, told me that he works for Mandela. He's his right-hand man. He's in the cell next to him for 3 years there on Robben Island, the last 3 years of the sentence. And that he heard him playing Sold American a few times. And then he said somehow Mandela stumbled onto Ride 'em Jew Boy. He said he would play this song, the last song, his sign-off song, every single night. Now, I'm thinking about that, and it sounds like a Kurt Vonnegut novel. You know, I mean, it just, yes. If it had been Bob Dylan he was listening to, this wouldn't be a story. It is a story, and it just shows you that it is true. You never know who's going to hear a record that you record. You don't think it's going to be Nelson Mandela in a prison cell, but as a guy from HuffPost said, he said if he had a choice of playing in stadiums and making millions of dollars or knowing that a song he'd written, especially that one, was played every night in his prison cell by Nelson Mandela on Robben Island. He said, he'd be me. He said, I'd be you, which is very nice. And the fact that this record, Loneliest Man, well, I don't know how Brian did it. I mean, I've made lots of records before, and they never sounded very good, and I never liked the way they sounded. I can't listen to them. And some of the songs were fine. But to be able to do another man's song and deliver it is also a talent. That's sometimes harder than writing it yourself.
No, the reinterpretation is I would imagine, so challenging. Because if you write it yourself, you know where that's coming from. You have the emotion. You poured it out. So before we close, let's talk tequila.
That's good, 'cause I'm going into a diabetic coma.
Well, you get a snack. This is radio. We don't, I don't care. And it's pre-recorded.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk tequila.
We appreciate what you're doing, Hannah. All right, go ahead.
Tequila. Tell me about the tequila brand.
Well, I drink Mexican mouthwash, and that's kind of one of the deals that is helping me. I call it the Barry Manilow drink. It's a Barry Manilow drink because it makes you feel good for a short period of time. And our tequila company in Texas, Man in Black, and it's really great stuff, and it helps me. And that's about all I have to say about tequila. I've had some interesting experiences this year, and one of them was the full realization of the Nelson Mandela business, which I think is the highest achievement of my life. I mean, if there is one. And I think that little fraternity of men become very important today. I mean, Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Mandela, because we are still... Inspiration still flows off of these guys. And I see them as true civil rights leaders. I see them as true leaders of mankind. And, you know, you can look at Obama, you may like him, you may hate him, but he really, I think he doesn't know how to be president quite, and I think he doesn't really want to be president. And his inspirational abilities are just negligible. He just doesn't have the chops. And this is not just Obama, this is virtually every politician that's running right now. So if you want to tell me you're inspired by Hillary and what she's going to do, well, that's wonderful. But I think there's very few people are. And certainly we're not inspired by Donald Trump. We might vote for him out of a total disregard for everything else. Bernie may have a little inspirational qualities, or he may be completely insane. We don't know. But
it's a fine line, right?
But I did tell you... In the same interview, you don't want to do something twice. But I told him my Bernie. But yeah, that is for the moment, I'm for Bernie. I kind of like Marco Rubio. I don't think anybody can fix this system anymore. And I think that inspiration is the key. That's what a president can do. And that's what a politician hopefully can do. And that's exactly what they're not doing. The same idea that I ran on in 2006 for governor, which is to let musicians, not politicians, run it. That would mean people like you and me, Hannah, would be in government or we'd be running for office. Instead, as Mark Twain said, we've got there is no true criminal class in America except the U.S. Congress. And the politicians are criminals. And it's the Crips and the Bloods. And that's about as simple as they're really the same guy admiring himself in the mirror. So my definition of politics appears to be holding true. Poly means more than one, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites.
I cannot think of a better line to end this interview on, Kinky Friedman. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.